You're listening to Potential Cast. This is episode 2 for season 2, Some Assembly Required. A series of grave robbings leads to a science club member who is trying to create a girlfriend for his brother, from who he has just brought back from the dead.
I'm Kimberly.
This is Gabby.
I'm Illyrio.
And I'm Kim.
Yay!
Hey, Kim.
Welcome, Kim.
Welcome.
Hey. Welcome!
You are a first female guest.
I feel so special.
Woo! So Kim does the Upside Down and Halfway to Happy Land podcast.
I do, yes.
So tell the potentials and tell the audience, what is your podcast about?
My podcast deconstructs the Buffyverse, and so I have guests on who are fans, and anyone can join me, and we discuss topics or episodes or characters sort of in depth, and we'll look at things from a variety of different angles. The other thing I also do is all my guests are asked to provide a How I Got Into Buffy story, which is a lot of fun. And I've actually had some amazing stories from people, like how Buffy really changed their lives. So that's kind of fun to listen to.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Is it spoilery for someone who hasn't watched the whole series to listen to?
I'm sad to say yes, it is. It's extreme. However, what I have done in the past, because my dear friend Kevin Batchelder was starting to watch the series after I had started my show, and he he was like up to season 4 or something, and he was like, but I really want to hear your show. So like I did a show that would be totally spoiler free for him. and if any of you guys want to come on my show, it will be totally, I will make sure that you are spoiler free.
Awesome.
For that episode. I'm very passionate about people being spoiler free, because I was, okay. And I think it's really important, because I think it changes the way you view the show if you know too much.
Mm-hmm.
So. So yeah, that's my story. And that's one of my shows. I have a lot of podcasts, but that's my, I'd say my primary one.
Ooh.
And you do Buffy Between the Lines.
Yeah, what's that? Is that fan fiction that you actually get acted out?
Yeah, it's basically, they're audio dramas. Mm-hmm. And
what?
So,
that is awesome. Sorry.
Yeah. Yep. So we have, it's a big deal. We have it's been a lot of work. When I say a big deal, that's what I mean. We have 2 seasons of Buffy Between the Lines, and they're set between the summer, or set during the summer, so between seasons. So we have one that's set between season 2 and 3, and one that's set between season 5 and 6, and they are just stories that we put together, and we worked very, very hard to make sure that they fit in the canon of the show. So it's somewhat seamless. But I was mentioning earlier that season 2 of Buffy Between the Lines is the one that goes between season 2 and 3, but it has a lot of future spoilers. Even though it's all in canon, there's a lot of stuff that alludes or that sets up stuff that happens in the future. So I wouldn't recommend that one, but you might want to try the one in between season 5 and 6 when you're there, because that one, I think, does not, it really just does a lot of prep for season 6.
I see an opportunity for collaboration between Kimberly and Kim. You guys could come up with what happened between season 1 and 2, and that way Kimberly could get all the, why are they so difficult with each other? Did something happen during the summer?
Oh, yeah. And wait till, yeah. See, and we do answer, a lot of questions exactly like that. So, because because there's changes that happen between, especially between those particular seasons. So, but we try hard not to be jost, which is a term you guys might hear, which means like you make a prediction or you write a story and then Joss writes a new thing that totally contradicts everything that you wrote. Okay. It happened a lot during the show, but it still happens because they're doing the comics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we try hard to make sure that we stay out of territory where we're going to get Jossed.
Okay.
So some assembly required, or Buffy does the Bride of Frankenstein.
I like to call this episode Horny Zombie. Because that is what I was left from watching this episode. It was so disturbing.
It really is.
It's just very disturbing.
That's man all. Cannot live on water and bread alone. Apparently he needs a Franken girl.
Yeah. It was very disturbing.
I mean, really, the just the thought of somebody wanting to bring somebody bringing somebody back from the dead and wanting to create a partner for that person, that is just bizarre.
But what I don't understand is the scientist brother brought back his older brother. Why did they need to take three women and put them together? Couldn't they just use one girl?
I think maybe the little creep had something to do with that.
Oh, makes sense.
I think he wanted
the perfect girl.
Maybe it was because it was a car accident and they were trying to get all the unbroken pieces together.
Oh.
Mm. So that creepy little kid with the camera.
Yeah. Oh. So slimy.
Yeah. I mean, weird. What's his excuse? I mean, Chris was traumatized by his brother dying and then him Frankensteining him back. So... what's the other kid's excuse?
He's a pervert.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he's crazy.
He wanted a girlfriend really badly.
I don't know. I mean, he knew it was going
to
be...
Cordelia annoyed him to death.
annoyed him to sociopathic tendencies?
Yes.
Perhaps.
That mean girl thing.
Yeah. So, it starts with grave robbing and then it goes to, I mean, it's difficult for me to actually broach the topic because it's so absurd.
I thought like halfway through the episode, it just shifted from like a really cool potential story to like the utterly creepy. And it was just, I don't know, it was really creepy.
Some girls from another school died in a car accident or something, and they dug the bodies up, and that was where two of the bodies came from, and then they... Well, Cordelia three of them. Cordelia was this guy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he died rock climbing.
Yes, yes.
So maybe that's why they wanted her head?
Why is his face so cut up if he was rock climbing? I mean, I don't know. I don't really, not like I've gone to the aftermath of a rock climbing accident, but wow.
Like, I think there's going to be a direct link between how high up he was when he fell and how messed up his face is going to be.
Right.
But the rest of his body seemed to be relatively intact and not there were some
metal bars on his forearms.
Yeah, that's true. There was.
On the outside, right? So I guess, you know, like metal splints.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting there to be Frankenstein Big Brother.
Me neither. That
coming
was
out from that.
Yeah, it was a surprise. You know?
That when he emerged from the shadows, I was like, oh, no, they didn't.
Just got real. You know, it really then was like, it's not just guys trying to make a living, breathing girl out of dead girls. It's because he needs a girlfriend.
Well, that makes sense.
Really well, does it.
And I won't be spoilery, but this will come up again and again and again and again.
That love isn't just for the regular person.
Like meeting dead people.
Creating a girl, creating the perfect girl.
It's true.
It seems to be a maybe a misogynistic idea, I guess.
Well, definitely. Yeah. I think it definitely qualifies as misogyny.
It's funny, though, because, like, how is that girl attractive? Like, really?
Well, beauty is in the eye or eyes or eye of the beholder. And if only one of them works because they only were able to find one of his eyes, then clearly it wouldn't be that big a deal. I mean, you know, it's all relative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we want to...
Well, I'm sorry, Kim. Go ahead. To talk about the really important thing, which is what is up with Buffy's pants?
Thank you. That is actually one of my notes. I made a lot of fashion notes on this one. And those patchwork pants were ridiculous.
I think they should be worn with Willow's shirt, too. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wasn't it to serve as a contrast to the patchwork that was the Frankenstein monster? I mean,
oh my gosh.
Isn't that why you would pick that particular costume for this particular episode?
Awful.
That is so awesome.
I think I finally get the whole high literary analysis of Buffy now. Like I've been turned.
It's a patchwork.
Yeah. Oh, it serves as a mirror for the. But it's true, though. It really does.
It's a mosaic.
It is a mosaic.
I totally did an episode like that. Like clothing in the bedroom.
Hey, I do have an anthropology degree, so I'm good with words.
It's awesome.
Oh, no, that's too funny.
Pants are, you know.
Do we want to do a feedback first?
I think we should do a little bit of feedback, and then we can get into some points of revelation. So
I will not read anything.
That's all right.
Okay. Well, let me tell you. Oh, somebody tweeted their ages to us.
Yes, and we also got an email with that content too, I think.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Oh, no. It
there was
we
a
didn't.
Blog spot.
It was on the blog spot, and it was also tweeted to us.
Okay, so in season 2, Sarah Michelle Gellar is 20. Allison Hannigan is 23. I didn't know she was that much older than
really, yeah.
Sarah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nicholas Brendon was 26.
Yep.
Charisma Carpenter was 27. David Boreanaz was 28. And Anthony Stewart Head was 43.
Wow. When did that show start? 97?
Yeah, season 2 was 97.
Seven.
All right, so Nick... writes in, hey Gax, glad to hear Kay back with you guys after those two gassy weekends. just wanted to write in to say how much I love the show. I recently discovered you guys and went through all of your episodes very quickly. I was immediately hooked and started gleefully recommending you on my blog and on Twitter. I'm already pondering re-listening to earlier episodes just to get me through the week. Awesome.
Aww.
I'm extraordinarily flattered that you think that you can listen to us twice. It's been said before, but I really love the fact that you've got people who haven't experienced Buffy, potential fans, as it were. It's just an excitement to hear people's first-time reactions. I'm one of those nutcase fans, or the nutcase fan, I'm not really sure, who actually likes everything that the writers did with the narrative. Yes, season 1 is campy, but it's my kind of campy. The rest of the show creates such a rich mythology that it's still enjoyable after many rewatches, and I love season 6. So don't let anyone talk you out of watching it, glares at Steph's friend.
Agreed.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your reactions to a lot of different episodes, and in the foreseeable future, Prophecy Girl, which is, in my humble opinion, the finest episode in season 1. I can't wait to see if you guys start shipping. Particularly, I'm thinking of how a lot of the fandom seems to come down on either the side of one major ship or the other major ship. Give Steph a knowing look.
Yeah.
I think it would be great if you guys did Angel as well. Mostly because I'd love 110 more episodes of Gax. 144 just isn't enough. If nothing else, I do hope you'll hit the crossover episodes, especially in season 1 and 4, for that one character, you know, Steph, the one in 5x5, Sanctuary and Orpheus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If you guys do decide to Angel along with Buffy, I highly recommend the PDX Browncoat's Guide to Crossover Viewing. And he offers us a link for that particular guide, which groups the episodes into story arcs and lines you up for crossovers, a particularly difficult task in Buffy 7, Angel 4. Lastly, I'd like to address the sire questioning that Steph asked a few episodes back. I won't use any names. Yeah. That way, It won't spoil the rest of you. It's a frequently asked question in the Buffy fandom. My standard fan wank is as follows. When Character 1 said to Character 2, "You were my sire," Character 1 was speaking metaphorically, in the sense that Character 2 taught Character 1 about the darkness and how to really be a monster. Obviously, Character 1's physical sire is someone else, but Character 2 was the Yoda figure, the teacher, the mentor. Love the podcast, okay. Gax, and please keep up the good work. Nick in Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Okay, I can go for that. I can understand that.
Yeah,
that
and I have an additional thing, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, because it's actually quite apropos another week that we're recording today. So let's read something else.
Okay. Hi, Gax. First, a plea not to watch ahead. There are so many major developments that you really don't want to know what is coming. The bad news first. There are some bad episodes comparable to the bad ones in season one. A few of them. Oh, this is a season two preview. I'm sorry. A few of them are very early in the season. Some say that Buffy only gets great midway through season two, but that's not true. There are some outstanding episodes early on. Season three and four have more consistently good episodes, but season two has more truly great ones. I can see that. Okay. As usual with Buffy, there is fun to be had even with the worst episodes. Yes. To give you an idea of how good things can get, the IMDb episode ratings, which are not very accurate, have Prophecy Girl as the number 28th best episode, which is the only season one episode in the top 40. So there are many good ones to come.
Oh, yes.
You by now know that Joss Whedon is capable of misleads, red herrings, and unexpected happening, etc., that gets turned up a notch this season. And, of course, with the Master defeated, there's a new job posting up in the Hellmouth for the big bad position. This is the first time Joss had been able to plan a full season. One was a mid-season replacement, and his attention wasn't divided by Angel, Firefly, etc. yet. The results are spectacular. One minor point, Christoph Beck takes over writing the music this season, and it is a major improvement. Enjoy the ride, Bob DeGrand.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
But I do want to note, Christoph Beck does not stay. He does leave, comes back briefly in season four, and then leaves again and comes back briefly in season six. So he doesn't, Joss actually has never been able to keep a hold of a composer for really much more than a whole season. It's weird.
I think we should read this one from Brian Curry. Gabby?
Hey, Gax and Robin. I just finished listening to the podcast for Out of Mind, Out of Sight. Once again, you guys hit it out of the park. Your opinions of the episode were nearly identical to mine, even after multiple viewings. Like you said, take out the Marcy plotline, and the episode is great. It is always a lot of fun listening to you guys ask questions about what might be important in the future. I don't think it is too spoilery to say that you guys are picking up on the right stuff about 50 to 60% of the time.
That's it.
Yeah, right. Jeez. I think you will be surprised about, about which ideas you are right about and which you have never mentioned again. Of the things that I thought was redeeming about Out of Mind, Out of Sight episode was that even though Marcy plotline was difficult to watch at times, it did deal with a notion of feeling invisible or unnoticed in high school. Something that many people can relate to as part of their high school experience in some form or fashion. I think that is one of the great things about the show. The writers take a very real, relatable issue that high school teens deal with and put in a supernatural spin to it in order to address it within the context of the show. Sometimes they are very successful, and as in The Pack or Nightmares, oftentimes it comes off feeling like an after-school special. Next up for you guys is Prophecy Girl season finale. Although it may not be obvious during the first viewing, Out of Mind, Out of Sight episode in some scenes was setting up events that will happen in the season finale. Some of the issues you brought up in the most recent podcast are going to be dealt with extensively in the season finale, most notably the comment you guys made about Buffy just wanting to be a normal girl. In my mind, Prophecy Girl is hands down the best episode of season one. All of the campiness you dealt with at times in season one, iRobot, Eugene, teacher's pet, that is all put to rest in this episode. As you have stated many times during the podcast, you are getting a lot of emails from listeners saying, just go through season one. Well, I think that this episode highlights everything the cast and writers learned in season one and shows just how much the show can and has grown over the course of 12 episodes. Prophecy Girl is one of the milestone episodes in the series. There is so much that happens in this episode that will have ripple effects throughout the entire series. Some events in Prophecy Girl will be addressed in season two. Others change the Buffyverse forever and continue to be referenced even into the final season. There is so much that I want to say, but it will have to wait until you've actually seen the Prophecy Girl episode. So for now, let me just say that I'm very excited for you having reached this point. I look forward to the next podcast and a big, big congratulations on finishing season one, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
I don't know why you had to be so brief. No, I'm just kidding. I love detailed emails. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time to put all that thought down. On your e-letter. For those of you that are wondering... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, for those of you wondering why we're reading emails that talk about stuff that we've covered maybe a few episodes ago, well, we haven't really been announcing when we're recording specific podcast episodes on specific episodes. I actually took the liberty to do that earlier today, and I think it might help with generating feedback that's much more close... to our to the episodes that we're recording, especially for people that have seen it before. So we might have, you know, a few more weeks of some people emailing us stuff a little bit after we've actually published our episodes, but I think it merits being read anyway.
Yes. I just wanted to say, with Out of Mind, Out of Sight, that episode is really important, though, because the idea of, like, that image of Marcy's hand fading away, that's actually the origins of Buffy. Joss has said that that was the image that he had in his head that got him started on the whole show. So that was sort of his baby. That particular idea of fading away into high school, like Brian was talking about. And that was the image that he had in his head. And so he was very excited to be able to, like, put it on the screen.
One more Prophecy Girl email.
Okay.
And then we can do a voicemail. I think we can get to some assembly required.
Okay.
Hopefully we're not just stalling because we're really creeped out. Here's an email from Missy. I know you guys are going to watch Prophecy Girl in the next few days, so I figured I'd give my two cents about the first defining Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode. Buffy's junior prom dress, coupled with a leather jacket, is a classic Buffy outfit, tough but girly. I bet someone will have a hard time holding back tears like Buffy when Joyce makes her speech about having a future to look forward to, even though the boy you like didn't ask you to the dance. Can Buffy survive the prophecy from the Pergamum Codex? The master is over 600 years old. She does, with a little help from a friend. The savior being Xander is a great reminder that A, Angel isn't a real boy, and B, Xander will always be there for Buffy. Willow's breakdown over Kevin and company being murdered in homeroom shows that she doesn't think being a member of the Scooby Gang is fun. Allison plays that scene perfectly. I'm 16 years old. I don't want to die. A heartbreaking quote from Buffy and Summers. Angel and Xander's quirky banter is hilarious, as is Cordy giving a vamp a taste of his own medicine. Can the master be killed that easily? Why don't his bones turn to dust? All will be answered in the premiere of season two. Cordy becomes a fully fledged member of the Scooby Gang. Disappointment to some people, but worth it in the end. Trust me. Giles showing real emotion over Buffy's impending death. And finally, that oddly placed sunroof comes into play. This episode, in my opinion, is one of the best Joss ever wrote or directed. It's 5 by 5, right, Steph? Missy. I think they're speaking code. Thank you very much, Missy, for the email.
Does that mean season episode 5 is like the greatest episode ever? Because everybody is referencing 5x5. And I was like, in a lot of the emails, I'm like, whatever that episode is.
It's actually a military term.
Oh, okay.
They're not building something?
It means like A-OK.
Oh, then I was totally wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, you could actually like look it up on Wikipedia, I think. But yeah.
Do they reference it in the show, or is it just something people just started doing?
It's a character's line. It's her it's her
motto, her credo.
Motto, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes.
Excuse me. The beep started, and then I didn't realize, hey, it's Emily. Totally not avoiding writing my political science paper, but really enjoying the show. Just listen to the Out of Mind, Out of Sight podcast, and I have to say, I really liked that episode. I mean, you know, the Buffy episode, and your episode is great, too. But this episode of Buffy was, for me, surprisingly good. I don't know what it is, but there was something fun about it. There was something intriguing. I really like how Cordelia's character is actually getting more, better. I hate to tell you, though, if you're warming up to Cordelia now, it's only going to get worse. She somehow suddenly decides that she's a good actress and gets acting lessons. And actually, in the Angelverse, becomes one of my favorite characters. So there you go. Watch Angel, because it'll be worse. Much worse. You will love her. Besides, you should watch Angel, because in my opinion, it's one of the best shows ever. So, looking forward to what you hear about Prophecy Girl, but I'm looking forward to more of what you guys think of an upcoming episode called School Hard, which is when my favorite character finally makes his triumphant appearance.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Emily. I wonder who this character is people keep talking about. Gosh.
All right.
No, I worry about too much hype.
we're gonna talk about School Hard in next week's episode, but right now I think it's time for us to discuss Some Assembly Required. Do we want to give a rundown of the episode, or do we want to move right into points of revelation? I mean, I think maybe I'll start by asking a question. Do we think this is a really bad episode, or do we think it's a good episode?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I think it's
good. I hate it. So bad it's good.
So, Gabby, you didn't like it at all?
No.
I didn't like
it. The first half of the episode I thought was hysterical. Like, there were a few laugh out loud moments, and then all of a sudden, and then like, it had high hopes, and all of a sudden, it just started to suck. And then I kept like looking at my watch. I'd pause it, check on the Netflix thing, how much time I had left.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's funny.
I went from loving it to totally hating it. So that's going to count against my scoring system.
I forget his name, the older brother, what's his name?
Daryl.
Was it when Daryl showed up that it really just turned?
I can't exactly put a specific time on when it turned, but it just... Oh, it just got really gruesome and awful.
Yeah.
And I have a thought about the putting lots of girls' pieces up to make one girl. I'm thinking it's because he thinks he's so, well, he's brought back from the dead and he's gruesome and everything, that he thinks that maybe, or they do, that are putting the girls together, that there has to be equally gruesome female that he can love, but then they can always stay together and never want to go outside of their own little world.
Because they're like, so disgusting.
Because they're so disgusting together, but so in love together in the basement of their mom's house.
I don't know.
It did have...
Maybe it's a reflection on, like, some society.
Well, it did have a bit of a Boxing Helena feel, right? I don't know if you guys have seen that movie.
Yes,
it's maybe a little bit of that. I still maintain that I think they were putting pieces together because some of the body parts were broken. They did die in a car crash, and maybe it was more out of necessity than aesthetic. Because why make it harder on yourself?
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just reanimate a girl? And okay, mm-hmm. Here you go, Daryl. You guys have fun. Just put a sock around the door handle. But it did really go kind of into it turned into what I think Criminal Minds would be like on HBO. Like the worst possible twisted, demented idea. And
yeah,
it's happening in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was a little bit difficult to swallow at times. I mean, I didn't hate it. It's not one of my favorite episodes, but I do think the idea of trying to bring your brother back to life and then, you know, because here's the thing. Here's one of the things about this episode that I really appreciated. And it may be too nitpicky, but I really liked how instead of showing us some kid who's distraught about his dead brother and at the end of the episode, he brings him back to life. The circumstance, it's already a given that his brother's been back to life. Okay. We're not even going to be, you know, told exactly how he did it. And what happens is what you would never see in any other show or movie like this, where, okay, I brought him back to life. Now I have to deal with the fact that there's a reanimated dead guy with feelings and his own personality and his own free will and his own needs and his own desires that I kind of have to manage because it's my fault that I brought him back. And I kind of like the fact that, you know, boy, he needs a date. What do I do? And it's kind of ridiculous. It's also kind of gross, but it's also out of, it's I think it's brilliant because we never really get to see that. We always get to see the, it's alive, alive. And then, the villagers show up. Well,
yeah.
The villagers didn't find out. And he's trying to manage this afterlife of his brother and trying to deal with what that entails as if he's just a regular person who can't go out. And I really kind of appreciated that we got to see, you know, kind of like, what if Dr. Frankenstein's life was a sitcom? You know, Daryl, what's wrong? Oh, I'm depressed. Oh, have you thought about maybe, you know, doing puzzles? I think I need a date with a girl. Oh,
I think it's how they did it, yeah. Not necessarily what happened, because it would be different if he was truly really upset that he felt so alone in the world instead of the way that it came across as some aggressively horny teenager, yeah. You know?
But the thing is, because he's 17 or 18 or whatever, that's kind of what it would come out as.
I guess so.
You know what I mean? So I think it's true to form, if I can be so audacious as to use that term for this particular context. But, you know, he wouldn't be forlorn and show melancholy and want to have companionship. He'd be horny.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he was just really annoying, you know, like really needy. And So the brother Chris was like, all right, fine, I'm getting you a girlfriend. Yeah.
Stop whining. Just because you went from football superstar with all the girls wanting you to being a shut-in because you're so ugly. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Number five.
I don't think so, but I think it's a funny idea.
Yeah. So I didn't hate it. Steph?
I think it's a good episode. I mean, the jokes are funny. I think it's real well written, but it just, like, the premise is just creepy.
Yeah.
Gross. Yeah.
Even the mother was so sad.
Yeah.
Like, probably the saddest creature we've seen so far on the show. I shouldn't say creature, mm-hmm. person, character. But, like, she was just so sad, and I was just like, I felt sorry for Daryl. I really did.
Yeah.
Like, what his life has become, literally living in his brother's shadow, mm. and then having to deal with the brother, like having to deal with the guilt of that. It was really... Anyways, can we switch topics? Okay. Can yes. I ask a question about Buffy and Angel? Like, to me, isn't it a little bit too early for them to be fighting? Like, the little, I don't know, the banter they had at the beginning of the episode.
They are like an old married couple, right?
I'm like, well, did you just have your first dance like 2 weeks ago? Like, what's going on?
Well, yeah. Well, the topic of the sexy dance comes back to haunt Buffy. She can never live it down.
Of course,
yeah. I can never lay down my sexy dance. So why would she be able to?
Oh, the sexy
Angel,
dance.
Angel is so jealous of Xander, and Xander is so jealous of Angel.
Oh my God,
that's
so
funny.
Yes. In fact, that bit comes up with Xander when he makes that ridiculously loaded statement. He says something like, maybe not, but people don't fall in love with what's right
in
front of them.
Oh, don't take my quote.
So I'm sorry. But that, to me, that is what makes me the most angry about Xander, because he's saying that with poor Willow right next to him, staring at him, going, uh-huh.
Well, this whole episode, Xander is oblivious.
As always.
Because he makes these remarks about, where's it at? Something about, that makes it official. Everybody's paired off. Vampires get dates. Hell, even the school librarian sees more action than me. He makes
no
these
offense,
remarks.
Kim.
But then, and he doesn't realize at the end that Cordelia is apologizing to him and is being very nice to him, and he's wrapped up in whatever he and Willow are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Is Mr. Oblivious again?
Well, that's so strange you say that, Kim, because I love that quote when he said it, because to me that's like the entire, like, everybody. Because they're all looking for what they can't have when what you need is right in front of you.
It just makes me mad that he says it right there with poor Willow looking in on him, like watching him. And you know she's just dying inside, like, oh yeah. You know, like,
I put ice cream on my nose.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, she's so sad. She really likes him. And he, all he does is talk about and think about Buffy and moon about Buffy. Mm-hmm. And so
I hope she snaps one day. I really do.
What do you mean?
She has one of those moments like, what's that movie? The Freddie Prinze Jr. movie where the girl, where she's super ugly and then she's made over. I hope.
Oh,
I
yeah. Hope she's all that.
She's all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope Willow has a she's all that moment where Xander's like, oh my God, you're so hot. How did I not know that you were here all the time? I really wish that would happen.
Well, you know, but see, that's not just to, he wouldn't want to encourage that way of thinking that, you know what I'm trying to say, Kim?
Relationships in the Whedonverse are,
it would be out of character for Joss to emphasize looks, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but he
definitely
does that with Buffy, though. The sexy dance? Come on.
Well, that's
but that was used to show that she wasn't herself, though. Really? Am I alone in thinking that?
I think so.
Really?
There's a lot of bra strap. Except in this episode.
She wasn't wearing a bra at all.
Right? That's just wrong.
Does she know she's going to do some slaying later? Come on.
One of my guests said that once. They said that somehow Buffy either can't wear, she never seems to wear a bra. I was like, I hadn't thought of that.
Right.
Oh, speaking of going patrol, Angel says that you're on the hunt. They haven't really settled on what they're calling what Buffy does.
Oh, interesting.
Like slaying?
Like patrolling. Like later on, they settle on calling it patrolling.
Patrolling.
Oh, where she waits for the vampire to wake up and then
she basically when she cruises around graveyards.
That's wrong.
Because that's what she does.
That's funny. Any points we want to broach?
Calendar asks Giles on a date. Also,
okay.
Style.
Did
oh,
Calendar,
you picked up on that?
Did Calendar know that he was trying to ask her out, but couldn't go through with it, so she just went ahead.
So.
I can't answer that question being a male. Because I wouldn't be able to even fathom whether or not I would be so inarticulate but yet coherent enough in what the gist was for someone to understand that, you know, she needed to ask me because I would never actually be able to utter the words. So maybe she did, but I have no point of reference.
Calendar is slick. She's smart and she's hot. And again, with the fashion, I'm loving the new hair and the outfits this season. Just saying.
I approve of Miss Calendar. I gotta get to the lab, Giles. I'm sorry. Hey, how about later? We go to the game. We can. How do you feel about Mexican?
Mexicans.
You know, and then you can tell me what you want to tell me.
Yeah, she totally let him off.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of chemistry between them, and I like them a lot. I really like them as a would-be couple. And I also noticed, as far as chemistry, maybe I'm wrong here, but maybe someone else can back me up. Does there seem to be more chemistry between Cordelia and Angel than Buffy and Angel?
Hmm.
I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I see that more. Not that I think it's going to happen. I just think I like them together in the scene better than Buffy and Angel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Cordelia is just trying to get under Buffy's skin by showing
interest. Of course she is.
Oh yeah.
Well, plus he's the only like he's not. He's mysterious. He's like this hot mysterious guy who doesn't even go to high school with them. So she's all like, "Yeah, I'm gonna try to pounce all over that." Because what are her other options, Xander? I mean,
I maintain Xander's in better shape than Angel, but you know that's casting for you.
Mm-hmm.
Angel's got skinny arms.
You know, so Angel is the only. He is still wooden. David Boreanaz is still wooden. Mm-hmm. I think he
wasn't an actor. He was walking his dog when the casting bell found him and said, "Hey, you should be on my show," because she thought he was like the most gorgeous thing she'd seen, and that's the main thing they wanted for Angel. They had all these people try out, and they couldn't find anyone they liked. And so she saw him walking his dog and invited him to come audition.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he wasn't an actor at all.
It's like Pamela Anderson being discovered at McDonald's in Vancouver.
Yes, and now he's like, you know, got his own series. So,
well, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, David Boreanaz.
You should congratulate his parents.
For making a pretty baby.
Yeah.
Pretty babies.
Well, did you notice Xander used huge words in this episode? Prodigious. And what did he call Miss Calendar? Dalsum?
Dalsum, yes.
Dalsum. That was awesome.
I love Xander in this episode. Yep, I mean,
so do I. Dalsum.
Dalsum?
Yeah.
Dollsome.
Like a doll.
Yeah. Like a doll.
Okay.
It's like a 1920s, you know, term of affection. Absurdly. I don't know.
Let's go to the speakeasy and find some dollsome chicks.
Yeah. Totally right. Yeah.
Speakeasy? You mean the bronze.
There was no bronze in this episode.
There was not.
No bronze.
That's going to reflect on Gabby.
Some random science lab.
Yeah. The old science lab in the school.
And then a mom's basement. Awesome.
Yeah.
Another thing that really gets under my skin, this is with like all television and movies, is like, when Cordelia went to her car to open up the door, and she drops her keys.
How
do they get so far underneath the car that she has to crawl and still can't reach them?
That's because the camera angle didn't show you the slant of the parking lot.
Obviously.
They bounced off her pom-poms.
Yeah. Wait a second, what?
And by pom-poms, you mean those things that cheerleaders hold when they cheer?
Uh-huh.
Or something else. No.
Her shoes.
Her shoes.
I must say, I didn't hate this episode, but it was a little bit out there.
I was surprised when I rewatched it. I was like, wow, this is way better than I remembered. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This is infamously one of I'd say one of the episodes the fandom considers one of the worst episodes. Mm-hmm. Steph, maybe you can disagree with me if you're...
No, probably not, because I was really dreading this one. But it wasn't so bad.
Exactly. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this is better than I remembered. Mm-hmm. So
I think it was all up until the reveal of the older brother, and then it just went downhill.
And that last scene where they're surrounded
by fire.
Don't say
it, because it's my second quote.
They're surrounded by fire, and he's actually... It looks like he's actually straddled on top.
Oh, yeah, with the fire.
With the fire around. And it looks like he's actually straddled on top of Franken Girl.
Surfing on...
Oh, man. I must say. Yeah. I must say, that was quite something. It really did turn into a craziness episode, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Do we have any more points, or do we want to rate it?
Oh, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Buffy said, I don't love Xander. I mean... Was that mean that she was trying to say that she loved Angel?
Hmm.
Yes.
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 I
think that's what the writers want you to think.
Mm-hmm. Well, at that moment, yes, she loves.
Yeah, she's 16. I mean, really.
Yeah. But it's just crazy. Angel is a demon. He's 241 years old.
But he has his soul back.
Yeah, but still. And he's jealous of Xander.
Well, Steph, he's a petty 241.
You know.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Is he jealous of Xander because he's like human with Buffy? Or is he jealous of him like because of like... him physically.
Yeah, well, it says that he's in your life. He gets to be there when I can't.
In the sunlight.
In the sunlight.
Take your classes, eat your meals, hear your jokes and complaints. He gets to see you in the sunlight. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like Edward and Bella.
Ugh.
Okay, I'm going to have to edit that part out.
No, I'm not kidding. No, hold on. Hear me out. People, I recently heard somebody compare Angel and Buffy to Edward and Bella, which I don't agree with. But that line is very much that tone where mm-hmm. that I think that idea comes from. But I don't agree.
Mm. No. They're nothing like them.
I just don't get the way that Edward looks at Bella. It always looks like he's constipated. I just don't like it. He has this look like, oh, I love you.
He's like the creepy stalker. No, he's not attractive. And I've read the books and I've seen the movies. In the books, he's supposed to be the most beautiful person. Mm-hmm. Most beautiful man that ever lived. I'm sorry. Pattinson, not the most beautiful man
He looked pretty good as Edward Biggory or Diggory or Jiggory or whatever he was in Harry Potter. He looked fine.
Cedric Diggory.
Thank you. Sorry. I apologize.
Diggory.
That's exactly who he was. He looked fine in Harry Potter 4. Revenge
that
of the.
It's not the Twilight Saga, Illyrio.
I know, but I'm just saying. You know, like yeah, I mean, Robert Pattinson himself can look thing, okay.
Because I complained to this. I complained about the exact same thing. I was like, he's supposed to be so beautiful, and he's so bad. And my friend Tabitha was like, "Oh, you're just old." So I was like, "Thanks."
Hmm. And is it just me or did they airbrush his abs?
I airbrush my abs. Doesn't everybody?
Anyway.
Any more points about
some
this episode?
Absolutely required.
Airbrushed abs.
Let's do our ratings.
Ratings? All right. Who wants to go first?
I will. Seven or a six.
Oh my God.
Wow. Seven. A seven and a half. I don't know. A seven.
I give it a 1.5 out of 10.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh my god.
I'll give it a 4.5 out of 10 because I actually really like Xander in the beginning of this. No. Until he makes that mean comment.
Okay, we have a lack of the bronze, which we all know. It's gonna annoy me. And as I understand, it is Bra Watch.
Bra Watch 2010.
It was lack of bra strap. So right there, I'm giving this a 4 out of 10 bra straps.
Nice. Very good. I'm going to give this episode a 5 out of 10. I think that was a yummy sound. Did you hear a yummy sound? I thought I heard a yummy sound.
I don't know.
It's a Young Frankenstein reference. Go watch it. You'll get it. I thought about 5 out of 10 putting on the Ritz or fire bad.
Yeah.
Or five
Ooh,
out
that
of,
would have been a great one.
Or a 5 out of 10 cross stitches. I don't know.
But there's always roll, roll, roll in the hay.
Sweet mystery of life, I finally found you. Yeah, not my favorite by far.
It's just one of those standalone ones.
Thank goodness.
You know what? It's doubly disappointing because we got some really good stuff. And then mm-hmm. it's like, oh. Really? It's like, wow, season 2 of Lost was awesome. They're in a cage for how many episodes? What?
But sexy cage.
Sexy cage. Sexy cage time. Yeah, it was just kind of a letdown, I think, you know? If this was an episode in the middle of season 1, I don't think it would have bothered me as much. I probably would have rated it higher.
Oh, man.
If this episode was in the middle of season 1, how many people would have stopped watching?
You really think so?
It would not have been renewed for a second season.
You think so?
I don't know, though. There is some good dialogue in there.
There's some pretty good dialogue in there. I mean, I have like 6 quotes. It's gotta be. It's gotta be, like mean for something.
Yeah, but you have to pick 6 quotes just in case.
Yeah, you're right.
Speaking of quotes,
quote
does
time.
Anybody have any good ones?
I have one, and I bet nobody else has it because it's very fitting for me.
No wagering, please.
I have. She already knows that you're a school librarian, so you don't have to worry about how to break that embarrassing news to her.
Excellent.
Because, you know, it struck home there.
Yeah. Mine is, whenever we fight, you always bring up the vampire thing.
Kimberly?
Okay, this has nothing to do with anything, but it made me crack the hell up towards the end of the episode. Third and long, seconds to go. Where do you throw? Where do you throw?
That was pretty good.
That sounds like something that would be in a Halloween Horror Nights commercial down here in Florida.
I was laughing for probably 10 minutes after I heard that. Okay.
Steph?
Oh, I can't find mine.
Okay. Here, you can have this one. Sterile enough for government work.
Would you like me to buy time with mine?
Go ahead.
That whole stork thing is a smokescreen.
Thank you, Cyrano.
Yeah, I loved that.
Karma.
Yeah.
I'm out.
The Foundryn might actually beat Sunnydale in the Crosstown Body Count competition this year.
Oh, yes. I'm surprised nobody picked, though. The most iconic, I think, dialogue from this is, "Love makes you do the wacky."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I'm an old fashioned gal. I was raised to believe the men dig up the corpses and the women have the babies.
Yeah. That was very good.
I like the, how about that? I always pegged him as a one woman vampire.
it's still very awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, hello. I want to get ahead.
For God's sake, can somebody scratch my nose?
Or the one, and speaking of love, we were talking about the reanimation of dead tissue. Do I deconstruct your segues?
Some really awesome stuff in this episode.
And yeah. Yet it sucked.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a hate mail, aren't I?
It's okay, Gabby. You can just tell them it was Debbie that said it.
Damn that Debbie.
That Debbie. She's saucy.
If you'd like to send hate mail to Gabby or Debbie, you can send us an email at...
Oh, that's me. Potentialcast@gmail.com.
You can go to potentialcast.com and check out the show notes for the episodes. You can also subscribe via iTunes through a link there. Or if you don't like iTunes, you can always subscribe through the RSS link that we have on the page if you're using some other kind of podcatcher. Also, you can follow Potentialcast on Twitter. And we're also going to start letting people know what episodes we're going to be recording when, so that you can send more directed episode-specific feedback to us as well. And that's our Twitter stream is available at twitter.com/potentialcast.
And also don't forget to go to potentialcast.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't like typing and you prefer calling in your hate mail, you can yell at Gabby by calling 270-40-BUFFY. We really enjoy hearing from you, and we try to get as much of your feedback on the show as possible.
Or you can send an MP3.
Yes, you can send an MP3 file.
Hate. To Gabby at.
If you would like to compose a musical that explains to Gabby how wrong she is, you can send us the sheet music by snail mail. We'll try to have a post office box ready for by the time you're done.
And I would imagine that if there's some kind of fanfic that has to do with it, we can also send that to Kim. And she will act it out with some of her friends.
Yes. I think we can speak for Kim and say absolutely.
Yes. So can we put this episode to bed, please?
Sure.
All right.
Bye.
Talk about homework.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Next week. School hard.
Yay. Bye, everybody. Thanks for joining us, Kim.
Bye. Yeah, thank you.
Other Kim. Kim 2. Does he look like me? Do you tell him?
One, two, three, four, five.
Awesome. See, instead of me counting with you, I just put the headphones up to the mic and I'll sync the tracks later.
There you go.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Right. Made me feel like I was at work. I do that all the time.
I'm
going
to count
kids.
To five.
I need you to sit down.
Sit down now.
What grade do you teach, Kim?
I teach all of them. I'm a librarian. So I preschool.
You're a librarian? Are you like Giles?
Oh my god. It's totally and I'm so excited because there's some quotes in there that I was like, oh, perfect. but it does make me giggle because Giles is like a librarian hero to like librarians. He's like this huge pop culture icon and I just die every time because
that's awesome.
I can't wait to put this at the end of the episode. Awesome.
All right, should we do intros?